How do we optimize our state of mind so that we can bring our best to the long run in sport and in life? I'm Eloise Wellings, two-time Olympic athlete, and together with my mental skills coach, Rory Darkins, we are here to help you unlock your marathon state of mind.
Hello and welcome to Marathon State of Mind. I say welcome because it's been a while, so even if you've been a listener with us before, thanks for tuning in again, but we know we've been away a little longer than intended, actually.
Yeah.
And let's consider this our welcome back episode.
Welcome back, Connor. We're back.
It's great to be back, Eloise.
It's good to be back. You've been busy. You've become an almost doctor.
Almost doctor. I'm not quite sure what that gives you in life, but...
Dr. Rory Darkins. Yes. Got a nice ring to it.
Yep.
March you graduate?
Yeah, I finished in March, but I have been pretty busy writing a very big, long thesis, which has been really good. And almost finished that. It's a bit like a marathon, really.
Do you want to tell the people your 10-second summary of what you've been working on?
What is optimal breathing? Why is it important for well-being and performance?
Sounds good to me.
So I've been deep in that, writing a lot, which has been really good, and hopefully publish some research off the back of that in the coming months, which will be nice. But how about you? You've been running marathons.
A little bit. I think our last potty was before Gold Coast. So yeah. We've done a couple. Most recently Valencia Marathon, which was a week ago now. Lots to say about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about Valencia.
So much to say, and also so much nothing to say.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it a lot on our run since you've been back. So, from my perspective though, like, well done in Valencia. That was an incredible effort. And, you know, obviously, as you've mentioned on Instagram, there are highs and lows in the same race, both in terms of how you felt about it, but also your blood sugar, particularly the low blood sugar. But we'll come to that later. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, it was such an incredible effort, to go about it the way you did. And obviously a phenomenal time, even when the end of the race didn't go to plan. So well done. Olympic qualifier, which is no mean feat. They've changed the qualifying time from the last Olympics too, right? So it used to be 2:29 something.
Yeah, it generally gets faster. The qualifying times, even for the other events, are a lot faster now than they were. So 20 years ago, when I had my first crack at the Olympics, 24 years ago now. Just obviously technology in the shoes gets better, and everyone's just got quicker, so the qualifying times get more challenging. And it's never been harder to make a marathon team, especially as a female in this country. In years gone by, the qualifying time was the hardest thing to kind of nail, and you would not be guaranteed a spot, but you'd be like well on your way if you could run the qualifying time. It just so happens that there's five women qualified at this point, and there's going to be another couple that'll have a crack at it, and it's crazy.
It's so good, and it's just great to see distance running, and in particular the marathon in Australia, women's marathon particularly, just keep going to new heights, keep going to new levels, and you're all kind of helping each other to do that. So is a good thing.
Yeah, it definitely forces you to level up. Like, you can't, you can't just do a qualifying time to get into a team. It forces you to level up and achieve your potential, push your limits, and all those good things. And that's why we're here, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the real game, is exploring your own potential. And I think other people doing that for themselves can help you to do that. Mm-hmm. If like you lining up with them and, you know, competing with them. And I think the one thing that, you know, I think there's such a difference between competing with others versus competing against others. You know, like, to me, that distinction is like competing with someone, you're actually like loving the fact that you're challenging each other to become your best. And like the goal there is to become your best, as opposed to it all being about being better than someone else.
Yeah.
And I think if we think of competition in that way, that actually like we relish the fact that we've got competitors that we can compete with, and that's part of what makes it so special, and part of what actually helps you move you towards your potential. It's such a healthy way to go about it, compared as opposed to feeling like your competitors are a threat and, you know, something, someone to like, you know, like, I don't know, feel kind of like you don't want them to have a good day because it might take something from you, you know?
Yeah, no, it's, I just feel like it's such a small way to live. And I know that, like, I've lived that way before and I've been that way before and I didn't like it, you know? It's such a, it's just, I want my world to be bigger than that, and I want to get better as an athlete because I get to compete alongside these other amazing women. And yeah, like you say, I think as soon as you start seeing someone as a threat, all it does is drain you of energy, you know, rather than, you know, like, I guess using that to fuel what you already have inside you and, you know, giving you the fuel to, I guess, do your best and being inspired by the others as well. Like, so many of the women that I get to compete against have got their own stories, and, you know, I know all of their stories intimately and, you know, where they've come from and what challenges they've had to overcome. And that inspires me, you know. I'm inspired by, you know, the women in our country who are, you know, 5-6 years older than I am, because I'm like, well, why not me? You know, why can't I be running a PB when I'm 46, 47 years old as well? You know, like, and so I don't know. I just see that as such a, I don't know, a positive thing. Seeing what's happening in the marathon with women in this country is such a positive thing. And it's fun to be a part of it. It's fun to be one of the, I don't know, the group that are in the mix for Olympic selection. And yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, that's such a great way to look at it, you know, too, because, you know, I think in 10 years time, 20 years time, you know, you'll look back and go, wow, how good was it that, you know, we all got to go after that in, you know, together, you know, like, yeah. Some of your best memories, I know for you already, so many of your best memories in running have been shared with, you know, people, like, you know, you think of Genevieve at the Rio Olympics, right? And and the races you had alongside each other.
Yeah totally. Like, there's most of my memories have been when I've been able to share them with, you know, other athletes that I get to train alongside and compete alongside. And those are the moments that you remember best, because, you know, you feel like you're in it with someone else, and there's a camaraderie, and there's you're on the same journey, and you're both, you know, you're all working towards the same thing. Yes, but, you know, at the end of the day, someone else competing better than me isn't taking anything away from me. You know, or someone else doing better than me, you know, getting a better result than me on one day or on one occasion isn't, you know, it's, I don't feel like it takes anything away from what I'm capable of. It fuels me to be better. And yeah, I think that's, and it's a posture that you actually have to choose, because it is really easy to go back into that, or not back into that mindset, but slip into a mindset that is threatened, and that is, you know, that tightens up because someone else might, you know, run faster, or someone else might, I don't know, be more successful or whatever it is. But I feel like having, when the times in my career when I've had that posture, it's just such an ugly feeling. Like it's so, I feel so uptight, you know, and not, I don't feel like I'm at my best. I don't feel like I'm myself. And, but I feel like when, you know, I can enjoy competing with, enjoy the competition, enjoy the rivalry and enjoy like, you know, the game that is like the competition, that's when I'm at my best and actually appreciating and like giving utmost respect to every single, you know, one of the women that I'm competing against.
Or with.
Or with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And I think, you know, as you kind of alluded to there, it's like, that's why I'm always harping on about how we define success, you know, because I think like you can see success purely in terms of like how you compare to someone else, and exactly. Like, and that's like such a disempowering kind of way to view things, right? Because someone else is in control of whether you feel successful or not. Whereas if we define success based on the things that we can control, which is like how we show up and how, you know, how we bring the best of ourselves and you know, execute on the things that are important to us that, you know, that we can control, then like to me, like if you do that and you can feel really good about who you've been and what you've done, and that's got nothing to do with what sort of day someone else has. So you know, and I just think there's so much freedom in that. And it's interesting, even as you were talking before about the feeling that you would, you know, comparing the feeling that you would have when you're kind of in that like, oh, other people are a threat mode versus the like, nah, I'm here to like enjoy competing with people and they help me to be my best. Like the difference between those, you can literally see when you were remembering what it was like to be in that threat mode, your body like constricted, like your shoulders like hunched forward. It's like there's a constricted posture, right?
It is. It's you know, it's like, because I'm a very visual person, so I, like the way I see it is you're sleeping with one eye open. You know, you can never fully relax because somebody might come and rob something from you.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like your experience of that, it's like, you know, it's this constriction, and that's like the opposite of feeling free, you know. And physically you can see it. And I think, you know, that's something that I was certainly like really proud of with how you went about this whole preparation, is you were just so free and you went in, you know, ran your own way, ran your own race, and, you know, and just brought such a great mindset to, you know, all that, you know, a marathon always throws challenges, you know, and they're not just physical challenges. There's all sorts of challenges in preparing for and running a marathon, and to navigate all of those, you know, with this sense of like openness and like this freedom to that, you know, you're excited to just go and see what you can do, go and do your best, and that's whatever that is like enough, you know. That's a really great way to go about embracing challenges like that.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was like, and it still is a work in progress, but I was very intentional about specifically about this one, because it's not how I went about, you know, the Gold Coast Marathon, for instance. You know, and it actually wasn't that I was, you know, fixated on who I was competing with or alongside. It was more about just fixating on the result and the outcome, and I just didn't enjoy the process, you know. I didn't enjoy the marathon as much as I could have, you know, if I had have been open to any possibility. But yeah, I was just really intentional about how I went about this one, and honestly, I had so much fun, and I would do it all over again, and hope to do it all over again very soon. But yeah, the marathon itself was, there was so many Do we want to talk about the marathon?
My next question was going to be like, yeah, tell us about your experience of running Valencia, because I think there's a lot to learn from that. Like, you know, one thing that I'm keen to talk about is how we review our own races, you know, our own performances and things like that. And we'll come to that after. But as a framework for that, you know, if we can hear about your experience of Valencia and how you, you know, what you loved about it, what it felt like, you know, and walk us through that, because then we'll come back to it as context to talk about like how we can best review, you know, things that have happened, like a performance like running a marathon.
Yeah. I loved so many things about it. I loved the city of Valencia in particular. Like, it's just so pretty. I loved the fact that I got to do it, you know, got to run this incredible course and race with, you know, Izzy and Jen and Lisa and Camille and my friend Gerda, and, you know, there's so many things that I was appreciating even before the race started. I was just like, I can't believe I'm getting to do this, and how good, you know, I'm healthy, I'm fit, training's gone really well. I was just so grateful to be there. And the race itself was, you know, the first 37K, I guess I felt incredible. I was smiling so much because I was just noticing so many things during, like, along the way, and just appreciating them. I don't know. I did write it on Instagram that I've never smiled so much in marathon, but I was just enjoying the experience so much. And, you know, we got to, I think we went through halfway in about 71:52-ish.
I think it was 48.
48, there you go.
Plus or minus 2 seconds.
And I turned around to Gerda, who was just beside me, and she's like smiled at her and she said, perfect. And I was like, yes, that's so good. Because it's about the same time as, you know, I went through halfway in and, when I ran 2:25 in Nagoya in 2022. And so I, you know, I obviously knew that I was capable of doing that, and I was feeling so great. And I'm like, wow, like, I'm feeling this good. And I remember how I felt when I did that in Nagoya. I wasn't as in control. Like, I was, but in Valencia, yeah, I was just feeling amazing. And yeah, I went through, I guess, at 15K, so five K before that, went through one of the drink stations, and my drink got knocked off the table right before me. And I remembered back to the technical meeting the day before, and like the race organizer was so like really intentional about saying, you know, if your drink falls off the table, please do not stop, do not go back. Like, just like, you're gonna have to run through. And I was like, I watched it was in slow motion. I watched it fall, and I kind of leant forward to try and get it before it hit the ground, but I would have been a 6 meter dive. I was that far from it still. But thankfully, Ryan Gregson was standing about 30 meters away, and he and Johnny were both registered to be able to give us our drinks should something like that happen, which was amazing. And Jen got hers, and so I've put my hand up to get a drink, one of Jen's drinks, off Ryan, and was able to take that one. And then, yeah, went through halfway still feeling really good and really in control. And then 28K came around, and that was another drink station. And I was starting to get really focused on racing and competing. Like, I was looking at, you know, who was still in the pack around us, and obviously feeling really good. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna start like turning the screws here. I'm going to start winding things up and seeing who can come with. And because I was thinking that way, I actually just ran straight by the drink station. And I didn't really panic because I was feeling so good. I didn't really bother me at all. I was in the front of that pack, so it wasn't obvious that the rest of the runners were going to the left, over to the drinks tables. And anyway, so I missed that one. And yeah, Jen and I kind of put our foot down, like from about 28 to, I guess, yeah, 35, 36. We're knocking out some sort of 318, 316 per kilometre splits, and still feeling really good. We actually had a laugh about it at one point. I was like, okay, we're on. And it's just the weirdest thing. At 37K, I noticed that my vision was just going blurry, and I tried not to panic. I thought, okay, there's either something in my eye, or my eyes might be watery or something. I just kept trying to fix it. And about a kilometer later, it was getting worse and worse. And about a kilometer later, I slowed down, like to try and manage it, because it was getting to a point where I was bumping into people that were running around me, and I was losing my vision. And I didn't really understand what was happening at that point. I didn't know that it was that I was having a hypoglycemic episode. But I kept running, as fast as I could. And I noticed that, my stride was starting to look different. And I mean, I laugh about it now. It's still a bit traumatic, but I was aware that I was running a lot differently now, like at 39K. I was running a lot differently, and I couldn't fix it. I couldn't, like when you give yourself some technical talk and technical cues, your brain sends a message to your body to follow the cues. And like, I was really aware that my brain, as much as I was trying to think, run, don't lift your knees so high. Like, I was running with really high knees. Like, I was overreaching, and not really going anywhere. Of course, I was just completely out of fuel. By the time I got to 41K, my vision was still really bad, and I could hear, I could still hear the crowd. I don't remember being super confused, but to be honest, I don't have heaps of memory from that last few K anyway. I remember seeing the 900 meter to go sign, and then everything went dark. And I stopped running, and I walked, I kind of put my hands out to try and find the fence. And I put my head down on the fence, and I just hear a whole lot of people, and there was a Spanish man there apparently, and he was talking to me, and I said something back to him. I don't remember this, but I was probably just a bit confused by that point. And Johnny was on the other side of the road, on the other side of the fence, watching it all unfold. He'd seen me at 35K going really, really well. And, just that look in my eyes of like, I've got this. And then, he rode the back streets. He was on this bike that he'd hired, this full postman's bike with a basket. And he was, belting it through the back streets, trying to get to a point of the course that he could see the finish. And Yeah, it spat him out to basically at that 900 meter to go point where I was just coming past and like just in all sorts of trouble. And I could hear him, but I couldn't see him. And he, you know, he was calling, you know, keep going. You're so close to the finish. And I yelled back, like, I can't see. I can't see. And yeah, I was obviously standing there for I don't know how long, but a few more seconds. And I could see, I started to get a little bit of vision back. I'm actually really grateful that there's no vision, or that no vision has popped up of this, because I'll be so embarrassed. I mean, if anyone does have vision out there of this, please send it to me, because I probably will have a laugh. Now that it's far enough away from the race, and you know, I am sort of laugh crying about it now, instead of just crying. And yeah, ran that last 900 meters, crossed the line, 2:25:47, and then yeah, I went down on all fours and just proceeded to vomit profusely. which I've never done after a race. So I was actually quite shocked at what was happening to my body. I still didn't know that, you know, that was the low blood sugar was the issue. And that's, you know, it was really, I was still confused as to what happened, how it went so, I guess, pear-shaped in that last 5K. And, yeah, but I mean, since finishing the race and talking to my, you know, my dietitian and a few other experts in the field, and yeah, it was really just a simple, it's a simple fix, yeah. You know, and it's a game of numbers, you know. I had less than a quarter of the carbohydrate that I needed in the last hour and 20 minutes of the race. And the first half I had, you know, bang on the amount that I need for my body weight and for what I'd practiced for as well. And the second half, I was just so engrossed in racing and running the event and like being in the moment, being present, and, you know, making the moves and, you know, following, executing my race plan that, yeah, I just didn't, I guess that was one, it was just a little thing that became a much bigger thing in terms of the fueling. And yeah, I guess the good thing is that, well, one of the positive takeaways is that I know that it's an easy fix, and that I'll promise you that I will never make the mistake again. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I got to the finish line and I was actually quite, I was in a bit of shock, and I was actually really grateful that I'd survived. I was just like, how did I finish that? Yeah. And then I guess as time went on, I had to process all of the what ifs and, you know, over the last week or so, and the flight home, and thinking about how it could have been and all those things. But I think, you know, my number one, I guess, goal is to remember the 95%, because the 95% of the 95% of the race was perfect, and it was some of the most glorious running that I've ever done, you know, from like just all of the sensory things, the light on the start line, this like glowing yellow light, and like the temperature, just the perfect temperature for marathon running, and like all of the people around us, it felt like I was in a vacuum, like, or just running with a school of fish, you know. And the drums on the course, and the that were like, you know, so accurately to the beat of, you know, your footsteps. And then it, there was 2 points in the race where I felt like I was in the Tour de France. Like there was literally people like standing, there was a tunnel of like, that was only a meter wide that we would run through, and people on either side and just like with their fists out, just like, ale, ale. And so I was like, what is happening? It was just an absolute dream. Until it was a nightmare. but yeah, I'm just, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm choosing to remember the dreamy bits, because the nightmare was, you know, it was a one-off, you know. It wasn't, I know in my heart of hearts, it wasn't a fitness thing. It wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a mental thing. It was purely a fueling thing.
Yeah.
And I know that when I get, I know I'm excited for when I can get that right.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling like I'm finishing this marathon, this whole process and this build up with so much optimism about the future and so much belief, because, you know, I was on 2:23 pace at 37K and feeling amazing. And I would never have guessed that. I was like confident that I was in pretty good shape, but least PB shape. I wouldn't have been able to tell you like the day before that I'd be like just really, really happy at 2:23, you know, like not feeling like I was redlining. Yeah. And so I'm excited. I'm excited about, you know, the next one. And, you know, I'm excited about doing some shorter races as well. And I don't know, it's just, it's a different feeling to how I've finished my last couple. And there's been, you know, obviously really good reasons for not reaching my, you know, goal results in the last couple as well. With low iron, I had gastro before Nagoya this year. And oh my gosh. But this one, I'm just like, nah, like I've still got it. And yeah, I'm like really excited about that. And I mean, I've just like to compete with some of the best, well, the best Australian female marathon runners that we've ever had. Like, you know, my coach Nick was saying it's the best marathon we've ever had, like, you know, the best marathon that's ever been run, because there was four girls that were, you know, that ran really, really fast. And, you know, what a privilege to be a part of that. And yeah, that was kind of my takeaway. I mean, yeah, I feel like I've talked a lot.
That's awesome. And like, thanks for letting us all in on, you know, on what that experience was like. And, you know, as you and I have talked about since, you know, I think when we review a race like that, like any, or, and it doesn't have to be a race, like any performance or situation that is important to us, like when we look at it, our brain has a negativity bias, which means we're always naturally going to pay more attention to what didn't go well as opposed to what did go well, you know. So we're always going to be able to find that, oh, if only this was better, or this, I didn't do this right. And in doing that, if we just let our brain do what it naturally wants to do, we'll only remember and kind of like focus on and relive all the things that weren't good. And in doing that, we can miss all the things that were really good. And when you analyze the things that went well that you can control, that's where you can actually learn most of your recipe for your next performance.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's such a waste to me to see, you know, like when someone lets that negativity bias just dictate how they think about an experience and miss out on going, wait, actually I did this bit really well, and I did that bit really well, and gee, like I was challenged there and I responded so well. Like, analyze that. And we have to actively do this because our brain doesn't naturally pay. We don't have a positivity bias, right? Like, we don't naturally go to it as much. And this isn't just so like you feel better, right? This is so that you actually learn and improve and build that kind of understanding of how to get the best out of yourself. And then it's keeping that in perspective and then going, okay, well, so 95% of it was like great. And let's make sure we extract everything we can from that 95% so that you've got all the learning that is possible that can help you move forward. And then you do the same with the 5%, which is like literally 1 minute. I think we talked about it on a run recently. It's like it literally takes 1 minute of thinking about that 5% in order to like learn from it and solve it for next time. It's literally just the math about the carb requirements and carb intake. Once that's done, you've got your learning and you're ready to go forward. And so I think, you know, this is kind of, you know, such a great example. I think that race is such a great example of, you know, like, don't miss the 95% that went right and don't forget the 95% that went well just because our brain has negativity bias that will get us dwelling on the 5% that wasn't good, you know. And so, you know, hopefully anyone listening to this, whatever it is that you're kind of reflecting on, you look for the good and look for the bits that you did well as, you know, actively, because, you know, our brain won't naturally do that for us. And so this is sort of the framework that we can take to reviewing anything that we want to learn from. And I kind of picture it in my head, like the real oversimplification of how we think about the past, for me is, I just think imagine yourself looking in the rearview mirror and all you're looking for is gratitude and growth. So it's like, what was good that I can feel grateful for? And then you're looking for like, what can I learn from?
Yeah.
And it's learning, the growth part is learning from the good and the not so good. But it's like, those are the, you know, gratitude about what was so great about an experience, you know, the things you've talked about, that, you know, hearing the drums and it's just the, like, the culture and, you know, those moments shared with some of your best friends in Valencia, like, that's the gratitude piece, right? That's the bit that you want to, like, you want to dwell on to keep, like, you know, take that forward with you. That's that's the gratitude. If you look in the rearview mirror, you find that. And then the growth is like, oh, cool, I can get my carb intake better in a marathon by just adding this and that, done. And also, here are all the things that, you know, that I can learn and grow from, that I did right, that I did well, that will help me to, you know, be even better next time.
Yeah.
And I just think that, you know, that kind of metaphor for looking at the past helps us to move towards our potential in a way where we actually take the best, we use what's happened in the past in a way that's helpful. You know, like, it's either helping us today through the gratitude and the good memories and the, you know, the good learnings, or it's helping, even if it's not a positive experience or something didn't go to plan, it's actually still helping you if you take the growth from it. And if we can do those two things in various aspects of our life, then I think we're leveraging the past in order to help us have an even better future. And to me, that's like, you mentioned optimism, right? And like, optimism, like, my favorite definition of optimism is a realistic assessment of the present with the belief that the future can be good. So it's like, optimism is all about the future and what we think can happen. And it's going, I don't know what it is, but there's good things around the corner. You know, things can be good. That doesn't mean that they need to be like amazing right now. It doesn't mean that, like, you know, the race needed to go perfectly in order to feel optimistic about what's next. It's like, oh, if I can get that, if I can take the growth from that experience and I can learn something that's helpful for my next one, then the 5% that wasn't good in Valencia can actually help you feel more optimistic about what could be possible for you when you implement that in the future, right?
Yeah, totally. And yeah, exactly. And I see that, you know, I see that with the girls that I get to run with as well, like Jen, you know, like, she's at the, her level of optimism is just out of this world, you know, her, you know, her story, her ability to come back from Achilles rupturing at the last Olympics. You know, she's obviously had a baby then since, and you know, it doesn't, you actually have to posture yourself in a way that that nurtures optimism, you know, when you go through challenging things and when you're coming back from, you know, like losing a lot of fitness after having a long time off. You have to be intentional about it. It's a choice, because otherwise your brain will go into that negativity bias of like, oh nah, well, you know, this is a risk that I'm taking, putting myself out there and trying to come back, because what if it doesn't work out? And you know, like, what if my brain in all its negativity bias since last weekend has been like, well, what happens if it happens again? You know, what happens if I get to 37K in my next marathon and it happens again? I'm like, well, it won't, because I'm going to fix the numbers. And number two, I know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I still finished the race and I still put myself in the mix to potentially be selected for the Olympics next year. And that was obviously one of the goals going in. And yeah, I think the more we can be optimistic and, you know, hope for good things in the future, as well as being realistic about what you can, you know, the things that you can change, the faster it helps you to move on, you know, and the more it helps you to like enjoy the process. Like, I cannot wait to get back to the track. And I can't wait to get back into, you know, another marathon build. And obviously I'm going to give myself time to physically recover and mentally get to my, you know, get the headspace to be able to do that and energy to be able to do that again. But, you know, I'm just so excited. And, you know, it's definitely taken me like a few days to get, or a week to get to this point, you know. There's been moments where, you know, the what if moments and the like, oh, it's just frustrating and disappointment that, you know, it could have, like, it would have been an absolute dream run had I been able to, you know, just close it out, like close it out, close the door. But instead, like, my eyes started closing. But yeah, I guess, I mean, one of the things that brought me massive amount of perspective, which is not the first time this has happened, but this was just, I mean, some timing. I was lying in bed the night after the race, and it was really early in the morning, hadn't slept yet. It was about 2:30 in the morning, and I had a message from Julius. For those who don't know Julius, he's the co-founder of our Love Mercy Foundation, and I hadn't read it yet, and I went to his went to the message that he'd sent, and it was a video. It was a video of a community that were celebrating the well that had just been drilled in their village. And the video was mainly of this one woman who was rolling around in this clean water, rolling around, laughing, celebrating. And there was all of these other people around her dancing and clapping and celebrating. And his message said, this is the first time that they've had clean water. And I was like, oh, you know, I just had this massive perspective shift, you know, like, this is what I also get to be a part of through running, and what a privilege that is. And you know, it was just something else. And I was able to, I don't know, like, after seeing that and being really moved by that, I was just kind of like, okay, it was very much a healing moment. Because I was like, oh yeah, it's not all about the result, and it's not all about the outcome. you know, these are the things that I can celebrate along the way, and, you know, what's next. And then I just, you know, wrote back to Julius and started Googling marathons in early 2024.
And then, I mean, wow, that is, you know, that is perspective right there, isn't it? That, you know, we're talking about maintaining optimal blood glucose levels for physical exertion, for optimal performance.
Mm.
And then it's like, this is the first time I've had clean water.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what an amazing perspective. And then I did get that list of marathons for the
you did. You were one of the handful of people that were copy pasted into the list of marathons of which one do you think I should
do? Which one?
But yeah, I mean, just quickly back to our Love Messy Foundation projects, you know, my biggest role here in Australia for Love Messy Foundation is to find partners to come alongside, to provide resources, to be able to carry out the projects in Northern Uganda. And yeah, shout out to Pargo, who make these incredible insulated water bottles, who actually were part of resourcing or providing the resources to drill that well. And yeah, just massive perspective and huge honour to be a part of that. And yeah, selfishly, I'm just taking it and running with it and using it for me as fuel to go, you know what, this matters to me, but in the whole scheme of things, it, you know, the fact that I get to use running as a platform to be able to do this is, you know, is the bigger thing.
Yeah.
The bigger thing in the thing.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's the power of purpose, right? It's going, yeah, I'm wanting to explore my potential. I'm doing everything I can to run as fast as I can. I'm trying to master, you know, my marathon. And, you know, there's obvious goals like, yeah, making the Olympics and things like that, and doing as well as you can outcome wise. But it's kind of also, why are you doing that?
Mm.
You know, and I know so much of your why is actually doing that is one of the ways that you can make a difference to people's lives through the Love Mercy Foundation. And, you know, running is very much a vehicle for you to do that. And so it's about more than you. And I think, you know, that is when you have purpose beyond yourself, you've got such a better perspective on, you know, the challenges and the struggles that come day to day with, you know, with anything in life. You know, it's like, okay, I can work my way through that because I can see beyond myself. I can see that actually this is matters. Like, this is beyond just my own ambition, beyond just my own, you know, my own gain. This is actually, I'm contributing to make people in the world around me better by doing this. And so it's like, it kind of has this, it helps you to persevere, yeah, right? It helps you to persevere when it's hard. And, you know, it makes it worth it almost independent of the outcome. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes in sort of performance settings, it's like we can let the outcome be the sole defining aspect of success, you know, and it just doesn't have to be that. You know, like, what if we define success based more on being the person we want to be and making the impact that we want to make in the world,
yeah,
like making a difference by being who we want to be. Like,
yeah,
if that becomes, you know, part of how we see success, well then that's so much bigger than an outcome or a result. And it helps you to have an outcome not go your way, and it actually not be feel like it's, you know, the end of the world or a waste of time, right? Because it's, yeah, like, it's about so much more than that.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel so grateful to have that, and to be part of what's happening and be part of Julius's vision for his communities and, you know, a greater, wider team on the ground in Northern Uganda and, you know, the local team and, yeah, our little team here in Australia, super proud. And, yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, we've obviously just done the City Marathon State of Mind course and the very first thing we do is, you know, a part of that course is to define, you know, your reason for running, your purpose for running. And I guess, the research is there around, you know, when you run for a purpose that's bigger and greater than yourself, you're more likely to succeed and you're more likely to stick at it and persevere when things get hard. And yeah, certainly that's definitely been my experience as well as, you know, so many others.
Yeah, that's bang on. And it was such a privilege to do that course with so many runners at the Sydney Marathon. And side note, how good that Sydney Marathon has passed its first year candidacy.
I know.
1 year away potentially from becoming a world major marathon.
Yeah.
That was actually one of the reasons that we had a slightly longer break than we planned from doing this podcast is that we co-hosted the Sydney Marathon podcast during that time, and as well as taking the Marathon State of Mind course for so many of those runners. And it's just so, you know, I absolutely loved seeing so many people show up and embrace everything that the marathon has to offer and learn so much about themselves in the process. And, you know, as we say in the course, like, there's just no better way to train your mind than in, like, when you're preparing for a marathon or, you know, you're preparing for something challenging like that. So shout out to everyone who ran the Sydney Marathon and those who were in our course. And I guess the only other reason we're away is
you had another baby.
Yeah.
That is Jersey something. Blue.
Jersey
Shout
Blue.
Shout out to Jersey Blue.
He's 6 months now.
6 months yesterday.
Yeah. So it's been a really purposeful year, you know, like, I think for both of us, with the marathons you've done, having the course with Sydney Marathon and you know, involvement there and, you know, yeah, finishing the PhD and having another baby, it's all been happening. But it's been, yeah, a really, like, enriching year, I'd say. Like, you know, and we're so excited to now be able to bring more regular podcast episodes, you know. And so thanks for tuning back in to Marathon State of Mind.
This, thanks for coming back to us.
Thanks for coming back. And thanks for your, you know, thanks for your patience in between times too. You know, we definitely didn't plan on taking this long. To come back, but I think, you know,
worth the wait. We are worth the wait.
I mean, speak for yourself. I'll let the listener judge whether they think I'm worth the wait. But thanks for being back on this journey with us. And, you know, you're going to be hearing a lot more from us. We're going to talk to some of the other runners who participated in Valencia, the marathon.
Yep.
And
get some of the gal gang on.
And on that note, you did mention briefly Jen Gregson's story, but, like, congrats, Jen.
Congrats,
that is,
Jen.
To come and run, you know, 2:23, you know, so, like, you know, it just seems like the other day that there's that vision of her, you know, having ruptured her Achilles at the Olympics. Oh. And you know, just knowing she's been on our podcast a few times, as many of you know, like, go back and listen to those episodes knowing what she has just done. And hopefully that fills you with a renewed sense of hope and optimism for yourself, because, you know, I think a real theme of our conversation today is just the power of choosing to see the future through an optimistic lens and using gratitude of the past as the basis for that. You know, if you can have a lot of gratitude for what has happened and a lot of, like, you know, a mindset where you look for how you can improve and grow from whatever's happened, that is one of the foundational ways to train optimism. So, because when you when you notice the things that have gone well in the past, as opposed to just ignoring them like our brains tend to want to do, when we actually kind of actively reflect on what went well and what's been good, over time our brain starts to expect good things to happen. Mm. And that's really how gratitude is a component for creating a more optimistic framework. And as probably my favorite performance psychologist Michael Dubay says,
Mickey G,
shout out to Mickey G as well. He's just written a book as well. Yeah. We should totally talk about that soon. But anyway, check out his book. He and his podcast, he does great stuff. But he's always said this, it's really resonated with me, which is optimism is at the center of mental toughness.
Mm.
And I just think so often we think it's the opposite.
Yeah.
So often we think like optimism is not being tough. It's like wishful thinking.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, actually, you know, if you want to become your best and you want to relish everything that that entails, then you almost need an optimistic framework in order to keep showing up and leaning into the unknown so that you can find out what could happen.
Yeah.
So yeah, train optimism through finding the good, starting to look at the future through that lens of what good things could happen and what can I do right now to move towards, you know, inviting those possibilities, you know, controlling the things that I can control the best I can, that, you know, that means that good things have the best chance of happening. So
love that, it.
That's what I'm hoping for you with your next marathon too, you know, is like this, instead of the what if, you said earlier, like, you know, how your brain will naturally go to the like, oh, what ifs, you know, it's like, why don't we flip that and go, what if I get that right next time?
Yeah.
How good?
Yeah.
How exciting?
Yeah.
So flip the what if from the past to the future and you know, allow your mind to see what good things could be around the corner.